Welcome to the CXO 4.0 podcast by Sullivan Stanley. I'm your host, Pat Lyons. Today's topic is focusing on the modern CIO should always own the change agenda. On this front, I'm speaking with top retail CIO, Phil Greenwood. Phil discusses how to get the board on side when they rarely have a tech background. He also gives his two pennies worth on the future of the retail industry and also shares his thoughts on the evolution of the CIO role as we progress in this decade and the pressures that every CIO is facing with hyper disruption. I hope you enjoy the show. Without further ado, over to Phil Greenwood. So it's great to, accepted our invite to join this podcast. So well, look, it'd be good for the listeners just to get a bit of view about you, Phil, and you know, all about you and what you do and why you do it.
Yeah. Okay. So I've been a kind of CIO for about 10 years, and I've worked in retail and technology for about 25-30 years. Various different pieces, from grocery with Tesco, through electricals with Dixon's, through coffee with Nespresso. I've worked overseas a few times, so I spent some time in the Czech Republic looking after Tesco's kind of IT interests in Central Europe. Then I had a few years over in India, based in India, setting up an IT operation for Tesco in Bangalore. And then the last one of those for me was with Nespresso over in Switzerland, where I spent just over 3 years supporting them with a big piece of transformation and helping drive their kind of digital agenda as well.
Clearly one of the things that you've been involved in with us is the CIO network that we have, CIO 2.0. And a lot of the reasons that was put together was, you know, what's next for the CIO role in the next decade? What's next for the CIO? And you've been a CIO within retail and all its different dimensions for well over 10 years. So how have you seen that role evolve over the last decade?
I think the role has become, for me, much more about, first of all, I think it's become a translator between the needs of the business and what you can do with technology. And I think that is a critical element of being able to find ways of explaining what the technology does, what it could do, in terms that people can engage with in the broader business. And most of the time, that comes back to the kind of single point that most people have got, certainly in retail, which is your customer. So for me, what's always worked has been able to try and find a way that you link absolutely everything you're doing within the IT context back to what does it do for the end customer, or what does it do to enable your kind of team members in the business to support the customer. And if you can get, if you're clear on what that is, and if you can get your, first of all, your IT team to understand all of that, because quite a lot of them can be kind of wrapped up in the tech and not necessarily looking outside in terms of the broader business that they're operating in, then that goes a huge part of the way to helping the board engage with what IT can do, because a lot of them have not come from that background in my experience and don't really understand it. And that's even true for digital, you know, right up to now, where people don't really understand the digital piece. I think the second thing that the CIO are able to do now is to support and enable and potentially lead a lot of the change in the business. Because you develop a lot of skills driving change within IT through projects and programs and such like that are not necessarily that common across the rest of the board. So for me, being able to enable, drive and support change in a sense, I think that becomes a critical role for the business. And certainly if I look at retail and where it's going now, it becomes far more, it's much more about experience and delivering a customer experience that is ultimately quite tailored to the customer. And, you know, being able to do that requires you to be able to process significant amount of customer data to understand, you know, enough about your individual customers to drive it. Which is a technology play. It's about how do you surface that and give, you know, in a way that people can action stuff. So it's not just there's the data, pick the bones out of that. It's got to be stuff that people can use. And then how do you put in all of the different foundation layers that you need to be able to support that? So a lot of what I think a CIO does is about simplifying that complex technical landscape, which isn't getting any simpler, translating it into terms that your business colleagues can understand. Normally for me, that becomes a focus on what does it mean for the customer, because that's a common language that everybody uses. and then basically making sure you can deliver on that and pulling in ownership from the other members of the board. So even if you are able to lead transformation from IT, you know, as a CIO, then if you haven't got emotional and kind of some harder commitment and ownership from the rest of that board, then I think you're going to struggle with transformation. That's been true forever, and I think it stays true. So
yeah, it's an interesting one. You mentioned a couple of things there, pulling in the board, you know, being the translator, and they were two things that came out. And we did the waking up the board session with a couple of our CXO groups last week. So focusing on that one, so when someone is engaging with someone like yourself, Phil, and they've got a set of problems and you've been brought in to fix them, what's your style as that CIO to sort of wake up the board and then take them on that journey? What's kind of, you know, how have you approached that, especially if you look at some of the retailers out there where traditionally, if we look at, you know, how IT has been perceived as more of a cost rather than enabler, you know, what have you got that you know, customer centricity, aligning a board on a transformation into a place where you've woke them up and take them on a journey?
For me, I think, I mean, first of all, I think you've got to develop a bit of an empathy with that. You have to understand the issue. And I think, you know, it comes back to, what's that business strategy? What's the challenge with the customer? What are you trying to do in terms of the customer offer? And ultimately, what does that business operating model need to look like? Most of those things are not, you know, they're not necessarily areas that people would associate traditionally with IT from a board perspective. So it's about engaging with that and understanding that. And I think you've got to establish a credibility in that sense that you can do that. Ultimately, I don't think you'd end up talking about the IT too much. But for me, it's decomposing those things, that those challenges and what you want to do differently for the customer into, so what does that mean in terms of the technical capabilities and the people capabilities that you're going to need in the business. And then, you know, you're kind of, right, okay, how do we roadmap that in the most sensible place? Where's the biggest benefit going to come from on that? How can we identify those things early and get after those things first? And then if you're talking about a significant piece of change, which you quite often are in retail, where typically, unless you're talking about startups, there's been a significant, and normally been an underinvestment in IT for quite a long period of time. So there's a lot of stuff you've got to fix, including some stuff which is not, you know, which is pretty foundational, fixing the plumbing stuff, which you have to do before you can build the layers on to be really innovative at the top layer. So I think you have to be able to paint that kind of complex layered picture of how all those things contribute to that delivery goal. Then the trick for me, and this is quite a difficult thing to get right, is if you can get people on the journey about why are we doing this, what is it that we're trying to do, what's the outcome going to be like, why is it going to be different, and why do I care? And I think you have to spend a lot of time working that stuff. And that's about, you know, it can be a customer experience is going to be different. It can be we're going to drive additional sales. It can be we're going to reduce cost. Whatever, it doesn't really matter. But you've got to be super clear about it, and you've got to be able to measure it. So I think, you know, I've seen quite a lot of transformational pieces where people start off trying to do something and they're not really, really hard on what that end piece looks like. So you've got to have that. If you can get that and you can drive the set of change that comes in behind it, then, you know, hopefully you've done enough to basically get the investment out. Then the bit for me that I've seen, you know, two or three times now, is you have to keep actively communicating back against that message. So if you're doing a transformational piece, and it's true transformation, it's going to take probably 2-3 years. And retail is quite a fast-moving business. People get a bit bored with stuff that doesn't appear to be moving that quickly. They're spending a lot of money on it. You know, it's always a business that's tight on cash. So you have to keep reminding people actively about why you're doing this stuff and that the goal is worth it at the end.
Yeah.
And if you don't actively engage on that communication, as soon as anything gets a little bit rocky, then, you know, you're on the back foot trying to defend that piece of work that you're going through. The other thing that I've seen work really well is so you've got that constant communication, and it's, you know, something I did in Nespresso. I actually had somebody within the transformation team whose sole job was about communicating on what we were doing. And, you know, initially that felt like quite an extravagance, but to be honest, it was one of the best pieces of spending that we did. The other thing is to try and turn those big and small pieces of delivery so you've got sufficient change coming through rapidly so that something is moving and something is visibly changing on quite a frequent basis. So big, heavy lifting stuff, which does inevitably take a time, you know, if you've got to overlay that with higher frequency, smaller change that keeps people engaged and interested. and what you perceive from IT as being a big significant piece of change may feel quite small in the business, and small IT change can feel quite big, so depending on how you touch it. So I think getting the clarity of the vision that you're trying to do, making sure you know where you're going to end up, making sure you know you can measure it when you've got there so that people can lock in on some really tight goals, being clear what that operating model starts to look like underneath. So it's not just technology, it's going to be the business operating functions, it's going to be capability you need. Dropping that down into the roadmap that shows you can deliver it, making sure you've got high frequency of small change on top of some of the bigger stuff, and then just communicate and communicate and communicate about what you're doing and why you're doing it all the time to keep it fresh and keep it alive and keep people engaged.
Keep those benefits flowing very, very quickly over small incremental chunks.
Yeah.
So have you seen that as your role as you've moved from IT leader into CIO, that you know you're almost kind of aligning the board, keeping the, you know, germinating the transformation vision and then leading the organisation to that business transformation vision? Would you say that your role's been more of that as a CIO?
I think a lot of the roles that I've done as a CIO is the board, in my circumstances, the board have generally known they need to do something different. So it's not necessarily been about, right, I've got to spark something because we're just stuck and you know, that might be forced to me to do that. There's been a board that's gone, what do we need to do about digital? We need to make sure that we, you know, we're following the customer. But you know, so there's normally something in there that they are concerned about that isn't where they want it to be. What normally happens is that that's not necessarily clear what the action needs to be. So I think the role of the CIO then becomes very much about trying to take that concern, that issue, that something that they need to do differently, and turning that into something that's more concrete. And it's a set of actions, and it can be people actions, can be process. Quite often, most time, there's something technology in there as well. So I think the role of the CIO is very much about trying to lay that out and turn it into a concrete set of activities and plans, helping the board with how to govern that, helping the board with understanding that those kind of change programs are going to have ambiguity in them, that you're going to need to be flexible and slightly change direction as you go through. Some stuff will land brilliantly, some stuff will land less well. That doesn't necessarily mean there's no, but you know, helping people manage through that experience of change on that kind of broad level, which not everybody's seen before. And you know, I think that's where the role comes in. So it becomes a kind of catalyst for change, I think, the CIO role. And I think, you know, that for me is the critical piece, which is taking, which can be quite high level strategy, taking a kind of perhaps not completely defined concern and turning that into a set of actions and plans to drive it through, and then helping everybody manage that and making sure you've got the right ownership and such like. So that's what, you know, certainly what I've seen within the transformational piece.
Okay. I had a stat for you I wanted to get your view on. So I put this into one of the groups about a year ago and I couldn't believe it. So just interested to get your view. But if we look at, we're talking about boards, and the board is, you know, a governing board, including chair people, NEDs, executive leaders. That 2% of the FTSE 350 in 2016 had people on the board that had a technology background. And this year it's only 9%. And so when you couple that with the amount of businesses that should be technology led and that are, you know, suffering or have declining revenues and dying in some instances, does that surprise you, that stat?
Is it
what you've seen?
It does surprise me. I think it is what I've seen. If you're going to define the board as the you know, the chairman and the NEDs, etc., in that sense, then I would have thought it was probably a bit less than that from what I've seen, to be honest. I think on kind of executive boards, in terms of the, you know, the CEO and the kind of top level reporting structure who are effectively running the business on a day to day, I'd be interested to see the stats for that, because it probably feels like it's shifted quite a lot in the last 5 years for me. And certainly the last two roles I've had as CIO have been on that exec board. So, you know, been able to influence that kind of the shaping of the strategy and the implementation of it. But ultimately, I think, you know, technology in lots of businesses now is becoming such an enabler for what you want to do. And that you do need to have an understanding of how to apply it, how best to make sure that you're getting value, you know, how to choose what you kind of do and how to support that kind of thing, and how it ultimately shapes strategy. I do think there's a bit of a watch out though, in that, you know, like a retail business, you know, it's largely a retail business. It's about selling stuff to customers. If that's where your model is and that's what you're trying to drive, you know, value out of, then ultimately that's about finding the right product, understanding the customer, and giving them the access to the product at the right price and where they want to do that. And that, you know, is what you're talking about when you talk about retail. So technology can enable all those things and make those things better and make those things easier, cheaper, or better for the customer. But ultimately, it's not a technology play, it's a retail play. So, you know, in my current business in Selfridges, the product is a massive part of the success of the business. And, you know, that is a very different kind of skill set that makes sure you've got that right kind of product set in the business. The experience of the customer, particularly if you look in the store environment, is enabled by technology to some extent, but a lot of that is a creative view and an operational view of what you want to do with that experience. And those things are equally important. So I think it's very important that technology, because it touches everything and you can't really run a modern business without it, and you are unable to do a lot of things that you couldn't do before, it's appropriately represented. But I don't think people should rush to suddenly try and reinvent their businesses as technology businesses without explicitly thinking, right, that's the model I want to go for. So there's a balance to be struck, really, in terms of those two pieces. But for me, representation of IT at the kind of most senior level, I think, is a massive plus. I expect that trend that you've described, which is starting to go in the right direction, to probably accelerate quite a lot. I think it's also about having the right kind of IT people, though. So, you know, in a board, we've talked about translation, we've talked about understanding the customer, we've talked about how does this stuff influence and drive strategy, and, you know, how do you drive value out of the business for the shareholders? If you look at technical businesses, then there'll be a number of people who've done that, but a lot of people are not there. They're excited by the tech, they're excited by what they can do. And there's a place for that, but you've still got to find that translation. Because, you know, most broad businesses are a blend of skills and a blend of capabilities, and IT is one of those. It's not the be-all and the end-all. So, a bit of a rambling answer, but I think, you know, it's something that I think we will see a lot more of, but I think there's also an element of caution that it isn't just tick the box and have somebody from you know, with an IT or a CIO on that board without being clear what you're trying to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's lots of valid points in there. It's just staggering that you wouldn't even have released an NED that had a technology background to be, you know, giving some advisory around those decisions. You know, you've got a lot of businesses trying to get close to the consumer, switching over to products and services. You're needing to look at different operating models that are actually going to increase revenues.
I think without having anybody there who's got that, you know, I think, you know, I completely agree. In terms of somebody who can provide a bit of advice, a bit of influence, and shape that, what's the art of the possible, even, you know. And I think that becomes important so that the board doesn't miss any opportunities. And I think, you know, broadly to educate as well. So, you know, I think a lot of the stuff I've done as a CIO, and I see good CIOs doing, is also, you know, if you go on a board for 2 or 3 years, when you leave that board, that the people on there basically are considerably more aware and capable of understanding and driving those kind of technology-based decisions and the influence they have on the operating model than when you started. So there is an educational piece as well in terms of sharing that knowledge.
Okay. So I've got an invitation for you to be the oracle of the next decade. So we're entering 2020. You can talk to anyone, right? You can read anything at the moment. You know, preferably I try not to read too much news for obvious reasons. As an entrepreneur running my own business, I probably wouldn't get out of bed if I looked at every piece of news that was going on out there. But we know we're entering a world of hyper disruption that's already happening. Yeah. We can only see the pace of that increasing.
Yeah.
The fourth industrial revolution, changing customer preferences, all sorts of demographics coming into the workplace. I mean, we could go on about it.
Yeah.
But with the context of the CIO role, how do you see that evolving in the next decade? And what part will they play in this, what a lot of people are saying will probably be as seismic as the shift from, you know, horse to car in terms of a shift in industry.
I think the businesses that you know, you see that will survive and will thrive in that kind of environment are the ones that are flexible, responsive, nimble, and are comfortable with a level of ambiguity about how they operate. And I think that comes down to the way you operate your business in terms of, you know, things like your processes and your organisational model, but also a lot of it comes down to the culture that you have in a business. And I think the CIO is in the vanguard of helping businesses understand how to capture that kind of flexibility and ability to respond, to try stuff, to test and to move forward. Now, that's easier in a small business. When you've got a large one that needs to operate and kind of deliver consistency of service, you're into the space about how do you balance that with that bit around flexibility and innovation and driving new pieces. And I think the CIO is well placed to be able to try and support both of those pieces. But I think that, you know, ultimately the CIO becomes a change agent. So we talked about the CIO driving and owning and helping support and enable change within the business. And I think that role becomes more and more front and centre of what the CIO is about. And it becomes a broader remit than just landing new tech. It becomes a remit in terms of helping the business land new ways of working,
yeah,
new ways of talking to your customer, new ways of understanding and trying things, and at the same time also delivering on a consistent customer promise that, you know, you have to get right for all the other stuff to be interesting for the customer. So I think the role of the CIO becomes more and more of a kind of board level change agent for the business and the way it works.
So it's a catalyst for change with an eye open on, you know, managing the now as well as delivering the future.
Yeah, because I mean, it's certainly beyond my capability to predict what's going to happen in 10 years' time and where things are going to be. So I think that's a bit of a thankless task, frankly. But knowing that you're going to need to be responsive, that you're going to be able to be quick and identify trends, that you're going to need to try things rapidly, decide whether they're working or not, and have a model that supports that. And that isn't just about a small kind of innovation lab that you can test tech in. It's how you can take those things that work and then scale them out to kind of, you know, full production kind of stuff across the business. And then you run into your people and your process challenges around how you do that. So I generally think that the role of the CIO will become a kind of board level organisational change management thing. And the operating model, which is a term which has been around for quite a long time, that's slightly become a bit unfashionable, kind of comes back into the mix around how the hell do we want to set ourselves up to do all this stuff? What capabilities are we going to need? How do we organise that? How can we change it? And how can we keep it fresh? And I think the CIO has a role to play in all of that. So you become a little bit of you've got IT, there's a bit of an internal consulting piece there, there's a, you know, general board strategy and customer focus, and I think all of those elements come together.
Okay, yeah, so a lot of stuff there I agree with, and we mentioned it before we started this. I think the great CIOs I see at the moment are owning the change agenda and the innovation agenda. They've got a board spot and they're orchestrating the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's where I see a lot of the good CIOs are going to be moving more into that space, regardless of what they're called.
Yeah.
Because you probably maybe have a love-hate relationship that I do with all these different acronyms that are, you know, coming out and proliferating everywhere.
Yeah.
But in short, it's strong business leaders that, you know, are able to please shareholders, able to please the board, but also, you know, deliver the future and make sure that an organisation's future-proof.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the grounding that you get in IT and tech and the stuff that you need to basically do to make that work gives you a really, really solid skill set to be able to support that kind of role in that broad agenda, which you don't tend to see in some of the other roles coming through. So I think that's the uniqueness that it brings to the board. But it is about that translation and that change catalyst type role.
Okay. So it'd be good to drop into a bit of your experience, actually. So, you know, delivered some big transformations for, you know, all sorts of different retailers as we opened up this podcast. Which one are we allowed to talk about?
well, we'll talk about the one I'm doing at the moment.
That'd be great. I mean, that's the one I was hoping you'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
So talk to me about, you know, the brief, but as much as you're allowed to reveal to listeners, the brief before you entered, when you entered, and now as you're, you know, looking, well, you know, finishing off very soon after a successful tenure.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that journey in the context of a lot of things we've been discussing.
Yeah, I think where Selfridges was is basically, I think, you know, and to some extent, it's still on that journey. It's a world-class retailer in terms of the physical stores that it runs. So particularly if you go to, you know, Oxford Street, I think that is a unique shop in the world. And the history and the legacy of the business is very much around delivering that kind of luxury retail experience in that space. And before I joined, you know, I think the board had basically got the view that they wanted and they needed to be able to start to develop that across an omni-channel base, so be able to do something in a digital space as well. And they'd worked through the point that to do that would mean effectively, you know, you've got to re-platform nearly all of your IT stuff and your processes that went with it, and you know, ultimately the operating model that's gone there as well. So you know you've got a business that's damn good in terms of what it does in the store that had, you know, started somewhat tentatively, I think, in the digital space, and had found, you know, as a lot of retailers did, that a lot of growth was coming through that channel, but would also recognise that it needed to invest to be able to continue to drive that kind of broad growth. You've got a relatively kind of unique customer base, in that you've got a large number of people who shop at Selfridges, but a relatively small number who drive a very high percentage of the overall revenue. And you need to deal with all of those customers in the ways that, you know, that they expect to be dealt with. The business is a lot about product, so in terms of what that looks like, and it's a lot about experience. And bringing those things to life in the digital space is a challenge. And being able to, you know, be able to talk about stock availability across all of those channels and give different offers, being able to provide all the kind of information, the rich data that you would about different products. If you go into a store and somebody's talking to you about something, they can tell you the story, they can tell you the where that's come from, they can tell you the inspiration for a particular product, and it gives you a richness to that experience. You can do that online, but you end up with, you know, you need to do it in a way that's engaging and interesting. And to be able to support all of those things and know your customer well, they'd recognise that they need to do an investment in that kind of broad landscape. So we've been working on changing pretty much every element of the IT landscape, from HR systems, from finance systems, putting CRM in, putting new stock systems in, putting systems to allow us to really enrich that product in terms of talking to the customer about what it's all about. Basically, new apps, and then, you know, on a large journey to kind of re-platform that existing website to enable the business to be able to change the look and feel of the website far more frequently and far more often, and to be able to surface all of those different pieces. So there's a lot of change within that, a lot of technical change. There's been a lot of capability building within the business that's been needed to support those different pieces, and it's driven a lot of things around different ways of working and how to engage buying teams, not just from a store channel but across a digital channel as well. And then understanding customers in different markets. So it's like Selfridges sells into about 95 markets around the world. And look at what that different offer needs to be and how do you move those things on. So it's been very much about establishing a platform for that next stage of the business to grow and expand. And been a really interesting thing to do so far.
What was your biggest challenge?
I think the biggest challenge comes back to keeping everybody in line with why you're doing it. So there's a lot going on in the business like Selfridges. There's a lot of, you know, it spends a lot of money on the physical space, spend a lot of money on IT space. Some of these big pieces take quite a long time to land. So it's about that thing I talked about earlier on around that constant communication and being clear on, you know, what the outcome is going to be, how you're going to understand that, how you're going to measure it, and really communicating that well. And that's been, I think, the thing that we've had to put a lot of effort into, and got some right and got some wrong as well, I think, as in most transformations. But yeah, keeping it fresh for everybody, keeping people engaged over what has been a 3.5 year journey and making sure people stay focused on what's the broad outcome that you're going after.
You enjoyed your time there?
I have, yeah. Yeah. It's a great business. It's a great business.
And just always been a consumer, but it's always a great experience.
Yeah, and you know, I've not worked in kind of true luxury retail before. Very creative business, you know, very, very broad international customer base. And it's fun. You know, it's a fun business. There's a lot of fun change going on there. So I've enjoyed it a lot. And I think we've really moved the business on in terms of what capabilities that, you know, I'll leave at the end of the year, what capabilities we'll have left them with and to continue to grow with.
And what were you most proud of from your tenure there?
From Selfridges?
Yeah.
I think landing the programme. So broadly, we, you know, slightly kind of datary stuff, but it's true. We've pretty much done what we said we were going to do for the money we said we were going to do in broadly the time frame that we said we were going to do it. And have delivered the benefits that we've said. In fact, we've over-delivered against the benefits. So for a big transformation programme, that's quite a rare thing to be able to say, I think. So yes. I'm pretty proud of that.
Can't argue with that at all, Phil. So, jumping into retail, we're going into the next decade. I'm not going to over-index on it, but, you know, it is an industry that, on the whole, is in distress.
Mm.
How do you see that playing out in the next decade? You know, everything from, you know, the high street retailer to, you know, the hyper-competitive sort of e-commerce models, through to, you know, different other versions of B2C models that you've been involved in.
I think, yeah, I mean, interesting retail, if you take a kind of, you know, slightly broader time frame, and certainly historically, it's the shift in power has gone completely from the retailer, where it used to be, in terms of you come to the store and you buy stuff, completely to the hands of the consumer. And that has happened in probably under a decade. And that shift is going to continue, I think, in terms of what that's going to look like. And people have responded to that or not. And you see the difference laying out. And I think even now, if you look at the retailers that struggle, then and you walk around some of the store environments that you see there, you can kind of see why they're struggling, because there's not a lot of differentiation. It doesn't feel particularly special. There doesn't feel like there's any particular reason to go do something like that. And if you're ultimately selling stuff which is relatively commoditized, then there are, you know, 15 other ways that you can get that same product and potentially do it in an easier way. And I think, you know, that what I have seen that's been interesting is, you know, when e-com first started, it was going to dominate and there weren't going to be physical stores and everybody was going to do everything online. And it's kind of hit a bit of a stasis point, as far as I can see, in terms of the balance of physical versus online. And even in the more advanced markets, you're up about, I don't know, this would vary from sector to sector, but you're kind of like around 25-30% if you've got a kind of omnichannel offer. And, you know, ultimately, most stuff is still in a physical store. And that's kind of slowed down quite a lot, I think, in terms of any further change to online. So there's a natural tendency for people to want to have a physical space to go and shop and to be able to get stuff online and research stuff online, get delivery for stuff that you're not, you know, is not desperately exciting. And I think that is something we will see on a number of markets around the world that are perhaps less developed than the UK is in a digital retail space. UK is one of the more, you know, advanced e-com markets around the world. And I think there's still something that people want to engage with in shopping. It's a social experience. It's something to do. It's kind of, you know, go out and do something for novelty purposes.
Mm.
And whatever else, all that kind of stuff. And I don't think that's gone away. And it's still very, very hard to kind of get that in a digital environment. So I think the two things end up complementing each other, and that means the retailers have to be really clear what they're trying to provide in their physical space versus what they're trying to provide online. They have to be really clear on what that customer experience, that customer offer needs to be, and what their proposition is. So, you know, it's a truism, but it's about the customer at the end of the day, and really getting an understanding of what that means. the challenge is that the customer moves much faster than they used to. So you don't have a lot of time to work it out. Mm. If they change, then you've got to work that out quickly and follow them. So, you know, you come back to how flexible, how quick, how responsive can you be? And how much do you know your customer? How much, you know, how much data do you have that you can use, that you can infer, that you can drive insights out of? So I think those things, insight for customers is about, it's not just about the offer, it's about speed of change and identifying when those things are happening with customers and being able to be quick and nimble and responsive. So I think the fundamental premise of retail and shopping hasn't really changed. I think people are always going to want to go and engage with physical as well as digital spaces. I just think it's the speed with which customers are able to share information, how much information they've got, will share good experience, will share bad experience, and will latch on to new things that people want to do, and how quickly retailers can respond to that, but also how clear they are about what their proposition is and where are they playing. So I think that's the stuff that people are going to have to focus really hard on in the next 10 years.
So it's a good question to follow on from that. We may have someone listening when they listen to this who could be on a board of a retailer or a board of any business, but if put it in the context of a retailer or an organisation with a sort of a B2C focus. They've got declining revenues. They're struggling to keep up with customer preferences. They might have, you know, lots of assets on the balance sheet, physical assets. What would be your advice to that board of some logical things to think about, some logical steps to try and pivot more into some of the stuff that you've been talking about?
I think it comes back to your understanding of your customer. So for me, if you don't have that, and I'm not saying that they wouldn't have that, but if you don't have what that looks like, what that customer is, what you expect that customer to evolve into, and then the strategy that comes off the back of that, then the first place to go is to start trying to capture some of that data, some of that information, and driving some of that insight. I think that's fairly critical, because I think pretty much everything drops off the back of that. And then, you know, any other offer that you want to develop will flow out the back. So for me, I would spend that time and investment really trying to understand the current customer, and then shaping what that customer experience and offer needs to look like going forward. And I think any changes that you want to do kind of drop out the back of that. And without that, then you can try and rapidly innovate on lots of different things, and you might get lucky, you might not, but you can divert a lot of attention onto something like that. You can invest in various different systems, platforms, new things to do, different pieces, but if you're not clear why you're trying to do that for, then it's very hard to get behind it and push it and be successful. So I do come back to making sure you've got really brilliant customer insight, customer data that allows you to support that, and then absolutely drive the strategy off the back of that.
Great. Couple of questions to finish up on. It's been quite quickly, isn't it? It'll be about 50 minutes, haven't we? Brilliant. Well, so, yeah. Couple of questions to finish up on. So, what advice would you give yourself 15 years ago before you took your first CEO role, knowing what you know now that you wish you knew then?
Don't take stuff so personally. Maybe step outside of certain contexts which feel like they might be personal for you, and have a look at the broader business context of why things are happening, and most of the time it isn't about you, it's about other stuff. And that has helped me deal with a lot of stuff where I think if I felt that it was like, you know, I was emotionally engaged with all these things, I could find it quite difficult. But you know, you have a context around things that allows you to step back and look at things with a slightly dispassionate external lens on stuff. That's helped me a lot in terms of lots of challenging situations, I think.
Don't send texts or BlackBerry messages at 10 p.m. at night when you've still got the hump on something.
Well, yeah, that is the other thing. Yeah, I mean, the classic, write the mail, walk away for 10 minutes and then come back in. Yeah, and I'd never do it on your phone, because it's too easy to do it too quickly.
That's bits of advice my old man used to give me. He was an exec in a bank, and he was like, don't do anything until you've had at least one night's sleep, and if you still want to do something irrational, have two nights sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Calm down, and then basically, you know, go away, think about it, try and put yourself, I swear, empathising with other people and trying to put yourself in their shoes and what's going on, and understanding the context of a situation, that sometimes takes a bit of time. And giving yourself the space to do that quite often changes the actions that you were going to take. because you can respond to something and you assume it's happened for a certain reason, or you assume this is being done, or you assume X, Y, and Z, or somebody's being a, you know, plain bloody politic. Sometimes that's true, but quite often it isn't. And actually just giving yourself a little bit of space to kind of work that stuff through, try and think about it as dispassionately as you can, which is a, you know, can be quite a skill if you're a kind of passionate person about stuff, and then engage again. And I think that means you're much more likely to be constructive, to be helpful, and to move things forward than you are to actually, you know, overexcite things and generate more noise.
Fantastic. And finally, Phil, what's next for you?
Well, I'm hopefully basically going to go out to a role in, as a CIO for a grocery retailer in Saudi Arabia. So who are in a bit of a turnaround situation. So are looking to really expand their kind of digital offer as well, and drive a lot more kind of operational efficiency into their business. So they've been around for quite a long time, well-established brand, real opportunity to kind of modernise the whole operation and really support you know, what could be quite a stellar kind of growth story. So that's exciting. And another totally different culture for me to go and work in. I've never worked in the Middle East before. And yeah, so, you know, as I said before, I'm going to no doubt find out some more stuff about myself, hopefully positively. And it will be, you know, it'll be really exciting, really interesting. So,
and we talked about earlier on bringing family on the journey. So
yeah, well, my wife's going to come out. Cool. So, yeah.
And you're going to live in Saudi Arabia full time?
Gonna,
do a bit of travelling?
Yeah, so go and live in Saudi and travel from there. Yeah, and there's, explore what there is in Saudi as a country starts to open up a little bit, and, you know, and goes through what in the society there is, it feels like a very rapid change for them. Mm. So I spent some time out there for this, you know, just validating what it all felt like out in Saudi for a few weeks ago. And a lot of the, you know, you'd meet people driving Ubers and all sorts of stuff, and they all wanted to talk about what was going on in terms of the change in society out there. And, you know, it was all positive, it was all exciting, it was all about being driven by what is a very young country. I think something like 30% of people under 18 or something like that. So it's a very young-oriented country. Lots of people on social media. So there's a whole kind of connected youth, you know, who have expectations around change. And a leadership which is trying to recognise that. So, yeah, it's a very interesting place to go and observe that from inside a little bit.
Wonderful. Well, listen, I wish you the best of luck with your next chapter. It's been a delight having you on the show, and I look forward to hearing all the stories in due course.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I've really enjoyed that.
No, me too. Brilliant. Thanks, Phil. Much appreciated.
Thanks for listening to the Change Society podcast. Sullivan & Stanley is an award-winning specialist change consultancy that deploys expert teams to solve the challenges companies face when undertaking change. To find out more, please head over to our website, sullivanstanley.com.